Hello and welcome back to The Dive, season 7, episode 20.
Nailed it.
Right off
the welcome back.
That's a lot of episodes.
Hey guys, what's up? Got Pudge here.
What's up, dude?
Oh boy. Off to a great start. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I had to wake up at 8:30 a.m. for this episode.
That's rough.
Absolute demon hours right now for gamers. I cannot handle it. But I got, you know, I got
4 hours, 5 hours?
Actually, I got 6 hours.
You beat me.
That's not that bad.
I'm kind of chilling.
Yeah,
I'm awake.
When do you normally wake up? What's the gamer schedule
well,
for LCS?
For C9, we wake up at like 9:30-ish.
Oh, okay. You guys are real human beings.
Yeah, well... debatable.
I was talking to Sven about this, how like Sundays you guys off day and you try not to F your sleep schedules up too bad, but Berserker always just like on Sunday sleeps until noon or something, or Monday or whatever,
and then
the next day is dead.
Yeah, usually the first day of scrims back is usually just terrible. It's like 5 hours sleep from like most people. We're just not ready for scrims. That's why Mithy's always like, guys, at the end of the week meeting, guys, Make sure you sleep. And we never follow him.
We never
listen to the coach. So he's probably like going to punch us soon. But I'm ready.
All right. Well, so this is right before we all fly out for Jersey going into finals weekend. Mm-hmm. We know the teams we're sending to Worlds. We know a lot of stuff to talk about here. So let's just jump right into it.
Yeah. So Faker played Corki recently, and then M&S played Corki.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of curious, you know, what do you think about the effect certain players have on the meta like that, right? Because I remember back in the day, like when Malzahar was super OP, no one was playing it forever. Then it got nerfed, and then Faker played it, and then it's like, now it's 100% pick ban.
Yeah.
And there's just some of these players around the world that everyone looks to. Are you kind of like surprised by that? Do you have players like that where you're like, oh, if the Shy plays this, if Zayas plays this, I'm in there?
Well, I think it's a natural thing that like we look up to, you know, LCK and LPL, and anytime there's a player that just plays a certain champion, we look at it and we like try to analyze it. I think especially with our Korean players like Berserker and M&S, they're very heavily swayed towards like whatever an LCK player picks, just because like I guess they look up to them more probably. Mm-hmm. So he saw Faker, he was like, yeah, Corki Azir, Corki Azir, and he was like, yeah, I want to practice Corki Azir like the entire scrim week. No team picked Azir in scrims like a single time, and then he just went on stage and he was like, oh guys, trust me, Corki's so big. Like, just give me Corki. And then we played with it, and we weren't really like, I think the thing that sucks is that as a team we aren't used to playing with Corki.
Yeah,
so you know, you usually have to play really slow, play really well around his package timings, play really well around his poke.
Mm-hmm.
But as a team, you know, Blaba just loves to engage no matter what. So, like, they're full HP, 100% HP on all five members. We're engaging. You know, we have Corki just rocketing them right now, but we got to engage. So, we didn't really play together as a team very well with Corki.
Yeah.
But M&S played it, I would say, pretty well, like, individually.
He had really good packages.
Yeah. He had really good packages. He made a really good play on mid lane when we were behind on Sivir. And somehow we won the game. That game was awful, but he played well individually.
I feel like that's the C9 motto. We played awful, but it's all right.
Yeah.
Because you guys said that after
you guys are 6-0 in playoffs. We're so bad.
EG,
dude.
Oh, they should have beat us in all those games. How bad are they that they couldn't win one?
It's like the kid in
NRG,
our class who
so
like
bad.
Paints the perfect, beautiful landscape or whatever, you know? And they're just like, oh, it's so bad. I don't want to show you. And then they get an A+.
I feel like nowadays we are a lot harder on ourselves for these kind of wins, just because we've been internationally so many times. And after you go internationally and you lose those games, after making those like even like half of those mistakes, mm-hmm. you just don't have the same like easygoing like review.
Yeah,
like I know that we're gonna go into review next week, tomorrow or today even. Maybe we have scrims later, and then Mithy's just gonna like be hammering us down about that game three. And I know that he was really mad. He was like, apparently, like after we like, we almost lost the game, they were about to end, and then FBI died like right before that. He got so mad that he just went into the bathroom and just like assumed the game was over, and then came back and was like, ah, I don't care about who wins this game, like you guys suck.
I mean, he was round himself up for like the angry coach speech for game
did
four.
You guys think he was gonna end? Because I thought he was gonna end, and then he used Ricochet and he pulled turret aggro,
right,
so you guys could kill him. Because I thought if he didn't do that, it was at least gonna be really close.
Yeah, it was gonna be very, very close. I think that's, it's likely that he wouldn't have been able to end, just because I was up in about 10 seconds before he even hit the first tower.
Mm-hmm.
So like his first order was when I was like about 11 seconds, I think. And I think realistically, Rell and I forgot what our support was.
It was Nautilus, I think.
I think it was Nautilus, yeah. Could CC him for quite a bit of time, and they didn't really have many other champions that could kill the towers. So mm-hmm. I think the game wouldn't have ended, but it probably would have gone two Nexus Towers. They probably would have like survived with like two people, and then the game would have been like pretty much impossible
different,
to win.
Yeah.
But thankfully, my friend FBI, our CE friend FBI,
Australia represent.
I heard the ricochet was from actually taking the inhibitor, and it just hadn't timed out, and he didn't get three autos out or whatever.
Oh,
must have been off the wave.
Yeah, or maybe when he was pushing the wave, someone said it was actually like he didn't activate it to hit the turret for the auto reset. It was just still
just
on.
Has a lot of charge.
Yeah, or something like that. So I don't know. Either way, C9 complete lucker dogs.
Yep.
Hashtag OC Pred.
So, you know, it's interesting because you touch on Worlds. Obviously, we're just kind of joking about the you guys being self-critical because that's how you have to improve, especially, you know, how do you kind of reflect on looking forward to Worlds? Because you guys have won back-to-back splits. You know, you're obviously, you're 6-0 in playoffs. You're favorites to win. You're trying to three-peat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you feel that you are a step above other competition here, like, how are you guys kind of trying to focus on international and trying to focus on being able to improve and learn from your mistakes if maybe your competition isn't necessarily showing you those mistakes?
I would say a lot of it is mentality. I think in previous splits, we had the mentality that, like, oh, what do we got to do to win NA? And I think now, after we've done so poorly internationally and it feels like NA is not super hard, honestly, we have definitely shifted focus to, would these mistakes be okay internationally? And I think we just have a lot more, the practice is a lot more disciplined towards, you know, being good internationally. And I think a lot of that is just taking it way more seriously, taking your deaths in mid game more seriously. And obviously they still happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to keep disciplined when you're sort of, you just feel like you're playing against a team that's not that good. But we are definitely way more focused towards international, and I think just having that mentality throughout the split allows us to just make practice more efficient, basically.
Yeah.
It's really hard to do a specific thing in practice that's going to help you do better internationally. You're still playing against the same teams in scrims. The only thing that you can really change is your own mentality towards it, and I think our mentality has definitely improved. Obviously, it's really hard to know, like, it's so normal, like, there's, like, the dread of being an NA team, and, like, you play an NA, and you're winning all your scrims, you're winning all your games, you're 3-0-ing finals, and then you go internationally, and you get 5-0'd your first five scrim blocks against Eastern teams, and you're just, like, if you feel like there's, like, the dread of, like, feeling that's going to happen again and again and again, you can't really change it. But I do think that with our new, I guess, like, more internationally focused mentality, I do think that it'll be a lot easier for us to be, I guess, like, fit into the new scrims and the new level of gameplay.
Yeah, in theory, you should have a better understanding of what your problems already are,
right?
If you're trying to be more self-critical, mm-hmm. and trying to examine things that should have resulted in losses, even if it ended in a win.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a catch-22 for the best North American team, it feels like, these days. And actually, even for a while for TSM, way back when they were the top dog, where, like, fans initially are excited, hey, you're winning, good for you, and then you go to Worlds or MSI and you disappoint them,
mm-hmm.
and then you go win again, and then they're like, oh fuck, they're still our best team, we have to watch them again. And like, it's really jacked up that I feel like this really only happens in North America of, mm-hmm. if it feels like the major regions, at least. Maybe,
no,
I'm just not
LEC
in touch.
Now too,
LEC now,
think about how LEC fans talk about Mad Lions.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But Mad Lions is like the black sheep now. Everyone,
but
all
that
the
wasn't
because
they won. That's because they got dunked on in play-ins twice in the last 3 or 4
but
years.
But it's about international failure. Even if they do win, even if they have success, no one's going to be happy for them in LEC.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a Mad Lions specific thing because of what they did in play-ins. Versus, this happened with Team Liquid. It happened with TSM before them, and now it's happening with C9. It's happened for whatever the dynasty is, where people get sick of the team being on top, failing internationally. And so I don't know what you do with that, because it's like, well, what do you, like you said, we're 3-0-ing teams on stage and we don't even think we're playing that clean. Like, don't be mad at us. You know, like,
I mean, the only thing I can really say to, like, the fans is really just, we're more mad at ourselves than you're mad at us. And if you think that you're criticizing us more than we're criticizing ourselves, you're not. The reality is we're hungrier for the international success than anyone else. Because we're the ones losing, you know, all the responsibility's on us. So we feel the worst about it.
I mean, you guys are also all the pros, and this is something that it's like, you guys are the ones who are dedicating your entire life to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's your yep. every day, right? So when you lose at the end of the year, I know how terrible that feels,
yeah,
right? Because it can feel like your year was for nothing, especially if you're a team that has already had regional success.
Right.
Then your biggest goal really becomes, okay, what's the next step? That's natural. People want progression in their lives, whether it's in competition or in their career or whatever, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, you know, it becomes one of those things where it's you really want to be able to succeed internationally. That is your big goal. And if it doesn't happen, you're like, well, there goes another fucking year.
Yeah, it feels like the excitement for basically our entire team is just off the winning two in a row, and we're probably going to win three. It's the excitement feel and the focus is mainly towards international, and it kind of like has a bad effect where it feels like a lot of our games in NA also maybe feel like they're less important. And when the games feel less important, you tend to focus less. You just care less. And when you care less about the NA games, it just hurts you a lot. So we're trying to also look out for that mentality of just like feeling like, oh, we're in NA. It's like not that important. Realistically, like we haven't won.
Yeah, and we are
playing poorly. Like realistically, like we're beating these NA teams, but we're not playing well.
And you guys lost to TL in the regular season and stuff. Like you definitely could lose in the finals.
Yes.
It's not a guarantee,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
One thing I'm curious about is, you know, Mark was obviously touching on it, but it's the idea that people are starting to have this feeling. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago on the dive, where it's like, I'm sick of Cloud9 winning because they're just going to go international and lose. So is there anything, you know, that you feel like you said you changed the mentality? Do you think there's anything that you guys can work on as far as like your approach towards Worlds or what you're doing at Worlds or international tournaments that can change or evolve to help get better results?
I think a lot of it is just... it's kind of weird, but it's like having a stamina for discipline where like you go to Worlds and then you like are way more disciplined usually in scrims. And I think that we're building up the stamina of being disciplined in scrims now so that once we go to Worlds, we don't feel like really like tired or stressed by having to focus really hard in every single scrim game. And I think we're just obviously, I think the mentality changes the actions a lot of the time when it comes to scrims. Just being way harder on ourselves now will allow us to be even harder on ourselves once we're internationally and help us focus a lot harder. And there's nothing you can really... I've thought about it a lot. I'm sure my entire team has thought about it a lot. There's nothing you can really change in NA for the most part in terms of your approach other than just being more disciplined and taking it as serious as you can in terms of practice and what you can look at. And just focusing on, like, what other teams are doing internationally and seeing how they play and trying to understand it and not just putting yourself in this bubble of NA. Obviously, like, we're playing in NA, but we can look at all these other teams, see what they're doing, and, you know, figure out why they're doing it. We obviously have friends. All of our players are friends with a lot of players internationally, so we can talk to them about a lot of like why they do things. We're trying this approach. We don't know if it's going to yield results, but like...
Cloud9 Fledge guarantees C9 is winning Worlds. That's the title.
Disclaimer.
Bit, like a lot of asterisks in the title, though. And then the fine print is like at the bottom of the description. I was going to say also on the fan thing in particular, too. It's like I don't want to blame fans for like getting upset that their team loses. And
no, it means they care about the teams and they care about the games.
Yeah, I think the thing that... at least for me, grinds my gears a little bit is when it's like the assumption that someone else would have been a better representative or like it somehow turns. Because like, to be fair, and like, I don't want to be too much of a doomer, but like North America usually doesn't do that well internationally. And it's like no one team would have better represented the region because this is what the region is kind of. We are the underdog. We are usually the fourth. Europe's been chasing us now down the rabbit hole a little bit. They've been following us down the rabbit hole the last couple of years.
We're going to clap Europe, right, Fudge?
This is the... I swear to God, dude.
Right, Fudge?
Honestly, the most exciting match, I swear, will be the fourth seed NA versus EU match. That's going to be
that's
the best
our world
match.
Finals, baby. Let's go.
That's going to be so good,
dude,
to
dude, they
watch.
Have lucked out.
It's the
so many
knife
times
fight.
they got the bug to get Rogue out of groups. Otherwise, no one in the West would have had a team out of groups. Rogue just lucked out last year. I'm saying we're gonna overtake them. But either way, the point being just that like North American teams, is the greatest. But we also struggle all the time at Worlds. Like I don't think
because we're unlucky.
Just because C9 wins domestically more, it's not like oh well then suddenly if they lose, it's a bigger loss than like the second place team in NA. It's like they both wouldn't have made it anyway. So what are we debating here? Yeah. Like, you can be upset that we didn't do it. That's fine. But I don't see why that would like suddenly make you happier for Golden Guardians or something.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, Golden Guardians at MSI played, I would say, like, pretty well. I mean, like,
I think they did.
They actually played above expectations. So there's the argument of like, oh, you want to try something new, you know, maybe you put in some play and they're going to like do some crazy things on stage. Realistically, no, you know, if they really wanted to do crazy things, they would have and won in NA. So I don't think.
Well, no. The thing that kills me too is like, we're boomers from being in this scene forever, but like back when TSM used to win all the time, they would do like scaling, like, team fighting things,
yeah.
And people would complain. They'd be like, "Oh, I'm so sick of watching this," because then they just go international. And they try and scale versus the better players, and they just get hands diffed, and it's so stupid, and I hate it. And like, I want someone else to win. And then you guys hands diff a lot of people in NA, and now people are starting to say, "Oh, I'm so sick of C9 just hands diffing people in NA," because then they go international. And they can't just hands diff the Shy and Rookie and stuff. And it's like, "Oh, I'm so sick of this." And it's like, well, what do you want people to do?
My opinion on that is that the scaling side is actually like you'd rather have the scaling side, just because I do think
for
that
international?
We are, yeah, for international.
Oh, interesting.
Because I do think that hands diffing NA teams, like, I agree. A lot of the reason why we win is just because we're better mechanically. Like, Berserker is just playing fights amazingly. MNS is playing fights amazingly. Bob is finding these crazy engages, sometimes not so crazy, sometimes just in thing. But like,
crazy the other way.
Yeah, like, crazy in many ways. and like, realistically, you go internationally and you're not going to find these mechanical edges. Like, they are just better mechanically because they played in a much better mechanical region like all their lives. And you'd rather have the team that's more strategic, the team that plays for the scaling, that understands how to get to that part of the game. Obviously, I don't think that a lot of the time you'll win anyway, just because they'll be able to get such early game advantages on you.
Yeah.
And I do think that as a team, C9 actually can beat the, like, international teams in lane, because Blab is really good at finding like edges and jungle pathing. I think he's actually very good at jungle pathing, where he can find these really crazy gank angles. And he's I also don't think that like MNS or Berserker, I actually think I'm actually the worst laner on the team, and I think that MNS, Berserker, and Zven actually play lane pretty well, and they actually don't lose lane that hard internationally. Whereas I actually feel like my laning phase is usually the worst one, at least the past international tournament that we played. So I don't think that it's necessarily early game that we struggle with, but mainly like the skirmishes, it's sort of like the randomness of our gameplay that sort of makes us just go behind when we play against international teams, because they're way more slow, they're way more methodical, and they think things through a lot, I would say, better. So I don't think we're necessarily going to get hands diffed, but I do think that if we were really... I do think that I'd rather have a team that plays for scaling, just because it feels like you won't win the out in these mechanical plays.
It's interesting, because to me, I feel like the opposite as far as what I've seen. Like, anecdotally, well, I guess not even anecdotally, literally every LEC and LCS team that's ever done well internationally is the crazy team.
That's true.
Right? Because we've never sent a team that is like T1 junior and is playing real slow. Because a lot of teams did try to be that forever, right? Because T1 won, you know, 3 world championships, and everyone was like, the way you win League of Legends is you copy T1's homework.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone tried to be T1. Across the world, everyone's trying to be T1 and trying to play really slow, trying to play really methodical, and you just ended up being a bad version of that.
Right.
Whereas it felt like when you have more chaos, if you are the underdog, a more chaotic game, sometimes it goes in your favor, Like, you have these crazy fights, and like you're saying, okay, maybe they are better than you mechanically, but it's not so much. Mm. So if you guys actually make it happen in a big
Burger
fight,
flip
a crazy
skirmish, and then you're up 2K,
and
fair,
all of
fair.
A sudden Berserker has a triple kill,
right,
then the small difference might not actually matter much,
that's
right?
That's a really fair argument,
And I mean, it's like, I think in theory, it's like the perfect League of Legends team who's played by like AI robots who are, you know, 10 out of 10 in every category probably is slow and methodical, maybe, you know, maybe because there is less variance in that if you can do it perfectly. But I think that almost no one can do it perfectly.
Right.
And if you're the underdogs, you want variance.
Mm-hmm. I think the other thing, too, which I was talking with Whippo about, because he was doing some casting over the weekend, is about like how much meta can matter for Worlds as well. Like, is Zekka the literal best mid laner, or did he happen to be the best Sylas, Akali, had a good Ahri, like he happened to end up in, not to say he wasn't good, but like it helped that
right
that
place,
became
right, time.
Right place, right time, and it feels like oftentimes there's four or five good Eastern teams, and one of them is the best at whatever ends up being the meta, and then they end up winning that one. It's rare that you see like dominance across a year from a single team. The golden road or whatever that people call it when you win, like everything is like, it's never really done for a reason. I think a lot of it's kind of meta.
Yeah, I wonder what the meta's going to be for Worlds.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Baby.
Oh, Corki's here.
Oh. PogChamp!
That is actually not bad for MNS.
Yeah. All right, well, we should move on from Worlds. Cool discussion.
Oh, one final thing. Format. Have you been following what Riot's doing with international format?
I'm so sorry, Mark, but I have not.
All I do is talk format.
He gets so angry at me every time I don't know what the format is.
We can quickly explain. So do you know what Swiss bracket, like Swiss is?
No.
Okay, so basically you have to advance from group stage, you have to go like get three wins, and to get kicked out, you have to get three losses, right? So all the teams will start, you'll be matched up with another team, you'll play it's a best of three, I believe. So if you win that best of three, you then move on and you would fight against another team that plays as 1-0.
It's best of ones.
It's best of one for the first one?
It's best of ones until elimination or promotion matches.
Oh, I thought it was best of threes and then best of five.
No, it's best of threes.
Oh, okay.
It's best of ones and the best of threes, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So basically, all of the teams are in this 16-team group, and then you promote up or down based off if you win, then split into eight.
Yep. And you play someone who has the same record.
Yeah, and then if you're at 0-2 and you're going 0-3, you play best of three to stay alive. Mm-hmm. And if you're at 2-0 to going to 3-0, you play best of three to promote into the bracket stage.
Got it. Okay. Well, so, interesting.
I think it's going to be really cool because the reality is, so you could still get boned on your first round matchup, right? Mm-hmm. Like maybe you're playing someone super good.
Right.
But as the teams are starting to lose, you're going to be playing the other teams that are more similar level, right? So there should be, in theory, a lot of like LCS versus LEC matchups, a lot of like LCS versus, I don't know, like PCS or whatever type matchups and things like that.
Right.
I think he's trying to show you the format. Sure. And so I think it's going to be really fun, really competitive, because my hope for it is that we have less of the dead games where it's like, you know, when I looked at MSI and some of the early formats in MSI and stuff, there was like so many games where it's like you guys crushing a minor region team or G2 crushing a minor region team or you guys getting crushed by LCK or LPL, like one-sided games. So hopefully it will end up having like a lot more close games where, you know, you're expecting LCK 1, LPL 1 are just going to be going up and to the right and they're out of there. And then, you know, like the lower seeded LCK and LPL teams are going to be mixing it up with top seeded LCS and LEC teams and stuff like that. And hopefully we're going to get some really good matches.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting bracket. I've never ever seen anything like that, but
it's just called Swiss, right? Swiss format.
Yeah, it's Swiss. I mean, League has usually had pretty standard, basic
pretty
formats.
Stale.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that.
Right now. I would.
No, I wouldn't say that.
The world's format hasn't changed in like 400 years.
Stale. Change it now.
Yeah.
Change it now, guys.
Yeah.
It's fresh. Complaining.
Fresh. It's something that like surface level doesn't matter a ton for prep. Like you're still gonna have to go and scrimmage most of the time. But I think in terms of like day of stuff, you won't have a day where you play three teams to get out of groups.
Right.
You'll
right.
actually be able to say, hey, we're doing a best of three. Let's like have a game one draft and then a like reaction and stuff like that.
There is the easier prep for the best of three, but I would say it's probably going to be harder to know who you're going to prep against for like if you win or lose, who are you going to play against? You're not going to really know. So like in a week in advance, for example, if you're playing against, I don't know, some random team that plays Corki really well, you're not going to be able to.
It's true. Your scrims are going to be weird. We're like, shit.
We
weren't playing them day one, but then we won and they won and now we're playing each other. Now we know all each other's homework.
So prepping for. Yeah, you might even be scrimming against the people you're going to be playing against like the second day, right? So I'm not sure how that's going to work. That sounds interesting. But honestly, at Worlds, like there's like this behind the scenes of like a little bit of scrim leaks, you know, between you know, regions and stuff like that. And that's a little bit sus. But anyway, you know, there's all that stuff anyway. So you're probably going to have scrim leaks regardless.
Are you sure it's BO1s, by the way? I'm trying to find that.
It's on the graphic.
Okay. Even for play-ins, it says everything in the playoff play-in bracket is all BO3s. So it's interesting that they go to BO1s for Swiss.
I think it's just to get the earlier matchups out of the way.
Makes sense. I mean, it's probably if it was all BO3s, it'd probably take way too long.
Yeah, that would take a really long time.
Yeah, because you have to play eight matchups in the first phase. I mean, there's eight every whatever. We're not going to get into
All right. Well, Golden Guardians just got knocked out, but Licorice won most improved player. There's a lot of Licorice hype these days.
Yeah.
I personally feel like he's at least performing on stage the best out of anyone on Golden Guardians. Mm-hmm. I think he's been really good, even in their losses. He played well against Summit. He played well at MSI. He was good last spring in playoffs. He's kind of just like shot to the top, you know, been like a really good top laner out mm-hmm. out of seemingly nowhere.
Right.
How does it feel to you? Do you feel like the hype is deserved? Do you feel like he actually improved? Do you just always lucky, you know? Like,
I think me and him were actually memeing the most improved thing in scrims, because I was like, he said, you're playing Aatrox. And I was like, yeah, I'm the most improved Aatrox. And he was like, yeah, I was so bad. And then I like improved all this and got most improved player. Like now I'm the most improved licorice. Because yeah. like, obviously he actually hasn't, I mean, from my perspective, not a lot has changed.
Yeah.
Like, in his actual gameplay, not a lot has changed. But seemingly on stage, I do think that he's playing a lot better than he is in scrims, where he's just playing teamfights a lot better. I think his Cassante especially, he seems to, like, be playing very, very well. And, I mean, obviously it's great for him, you know, like, the narrative is, like, back in his favor, obviously, after all these years of the narrative being awful for him. But realistically, like, he hasn't improved a lot. I would just say he's always been at that level, and he's always had that in him. On stage, it does seem like he's I guess more in the zone. He's more ready for the games, more focused maybe, and he's able to find these really good angles and just play a lot more consistently. And I would agree with you that he's definitely the best player on stage. Like from watching the games, I think he's the most consistently playing in terms of like his laning phase is always solid, and his team fighting especially is always solid. Whereas like the other players, you can argue have like some really weird moments. It's really good for him. And honestly, I just think that the most improved thing is a little bit of a meme.
I mean, I can get that. But at the end of the day, those awards are based on what you do on stage.
Right.
Right. It's exactly. not going to be based on what you do in scrims.
I haven't seen Jack Show Renekton since the middle of summer or spring split now.
Who played Jack Show Renekton?
He spammed that shit.
He did?
Yeah. Every time he played Renekton, it was this weak side Jack Show Renekton thing.
It wasn't Jack
Show. There's no way he went.
Yeah, Jack Show Renekton. I'm not trolling. I was always talking about how Licorice would play Jack Show Renekton.
He did like Black Cleaver Jack Show or whatever.
Yeah, I'll pull it up if you don't
Black
believe me.
Black Cleaver Jack Show can make sense depending on the game.
Yeah, I think he did Black Cleaver Jack Show.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's interesting because we had obviously him and 6A on the dive, and they also talked. We're like, do you guys feel like you got better? Do you feel like it's the same results? And they were both the same. They're like, no, we've always been this good. It's just like basically team got better, right? Like we're on a better team, right? And that's how they felt, is that
they were kind of like a victim
of circumstance almost, that they were on teams that, you know, whether they played well or played poorly didn't necessarily change the result,
right?
Because things weren't working well around them, and they felt that the team that they're on now, when they do well, it matters more, right? Because they're playing with better teammates, their team is more stable, they're going to get more wins, and also your teammates are going to enable you to have more success, right?
Right.
Like if you really play your top lane well, and then enemy jungler comes top and your jungler doesn't come top to like fix your wave or help you out in situations where you need it, maybe you're just boned and then you look
bad. So like there's this thing with top lane though, that like if you're playing on a really bad team as a top laner, you can actually look really good.
Because you're so disconnected.
Because like you're so disconnected. So like if your entire team's losing, your entire team's like dying, losing skirmishes, and you solo kill the enemy top laner, and you solo kill the enemy top laner again because he's just like inting 1v1, and then like all of a sudden it's like, oh my god, like 2021 Fudge in summer split, he was like, oh my god, dude, Fudge is playing so well, and because my entire team was like kind of inting, and then it's like as a top laner sometimes your team being bad can make you look good. Especially
so Immortals Fudge will be popping off.
Well, I don't know about that. Right now, I would say that like as a player, I'm not actually playing well individually, but as a team, I'm a lot more cohesive than I used to be. I'm way better at playing with my team nowadays, and I'm way better at playing towards like the overall like goal of the game.
You're
and how
glue
to play
guy.
The game. Yeah,
oh,
I'm
no.
the glue guy. Yeah. That sounds awful to hear, right? It's like, oh god, gosh.
Fudge is so good for team morale.
I should just be summit and just like play like an absolute maniac, you know? But like, as a top laner, I do think that there's like the room for being on a bad team that you can play well. I think all the other roles is not the same. I think like if you have bad teammates in all the other roles, you're just going to look awful.
Unless you're Lyra on Envy. And
yeah,
then
unless
you,
you're
then
absolutely
then
crazy,
you win MVP.
But if you do well with like bad teammates in the other four roles, you're automatically a god.
Yeah. But it's incredibly hard.
Yeah, it's incredibly hard. So obviously, like it's just as a top laner, you know, you're hoping that your team's going to be good because usually you won't win the games even if you're like better than the enemy top laner.
Team diff.
So on this top lane conversation, we have a couple questions from the LCS Discord. I'm going to ask you two, and you can answer both of them. From Commissar Bubbles, what was your favorite top lane meta ever? And then the second one from Yanni is, what is one champion you wish you could get away with in pro play without your team like complaining that you're playing this greedy, selfish thing probably?
Uh-huh.
So meta first, I guess.
So for meta, I enjoyed 2021 Summer Split, I was playing Biego top lane a lot. That was so fun. I miss playing Biego so much. That champion is so, like, it's just so much dopamine every single time you kill someone and you just reset and no one knows how to play against Biego. Even now, no one knows how to play against Biego. No one knows how to, honestly, the thing I hate the most, actually, this is off the topic. All the ADC players suck at playing against top lane champions. Every single time I see Berserker playing against Kassante or Renekton or Aatrox, he cannot play the game. He can't ulti, Malphite ult Zaya. Like, Hornsa and Scrims was just ulting him and he couldn't ulti it. I was so triggered. Anyway, moving on from that, I just had to put that out there. Anyway, Viego Gwen, I think, was my favorite meta. Lee Sin top was really, really fun. Oh,
yeah, you were popping off on Lee Sin top.
Those were the glory days of Fudge Cakey. You know, nowadays, like, I'm just.
That was actually to your point about the top laner looking good while teams running it down at international competition. Yeah, everyone's like, hey, C9's getting bodied, but Fudge in the top, looking pretty good. Yeah.
Now you're just the glue guy.
Yeah, now I'm just the glue guy with my teams just winning. And I just look
just
average,
let Berserker
you know?
Carry, dude. Just do less.
I mean, I'm okay with it, honestly. Yeah. I'll take my wins. I'll take my bonus. I'll take my prize pool. Thank you very much.
What about what champ that you wish you could get away with?
Honestly, I don't really have like a greedy champ I like playing. Probably like Fiora. I think Fiora is just like not usually pretty good for team comp.
You don't have like your guilty pleasure that you want to go in solo queue and you're just like,
I wish I could be rich and play Quinn.
I'm gonna learn at level one.
No, Quinn is just bad, man. I swear to God.
What about Kled though? Kled's so fun.
Kled is so. Dude, Vega V2 was trying to get me to play Kled. Like, our coach was like positional coach for top lane. He was like trying to get me to play Kled like the entire split because like Broken Blade was playing it on G2 or something like that. And it's like so good. And I'm like, no, bro, this champion sucks. And then eventually they just stopped playing it. So I was right. Thank you very much. Where's the camera? Is that
any of these? Any of them, I guess not.
I was right. Vega V2. Thank you very much. But I like playing Jace, I like playing Fiora, I like playing Camille, these type of champions, but they usually all like require a lot of jungle assistance. Maybe not Fiora as much, but Jace and Camille especially. And like, you know, we just don't have time for top lane in this meta, you know? We gotta play for dragons, we gotta stack them dragons, we gotta play for Berserker, we gotta play for MNS. MNS needs help on every single mid wave, you know? Otherwise he's gonna int, so we gotta just play Renekton, push some waves, and fight Herald, you know? That's your job.
I like how everything that's been good top recently has gone mid as well. They're like, oh, Jace is good, I will take that. And like, Kassante's really broken, we'll start taking that too. Oh, it got nerfed, back to top now again.
That's funny. All right, let's move on a bit to some of the playoff stuff. So this last week, we obviously had four different series. TLB EG 3-1, Golden Guardians 3-0 Dig, then you guys 3-0 NRG, and then TL 3-2 over Golden Guardians.
3.5-2.
Yeah.
Six games
game
total.
Six series. Yep. Took all six to finish the five-game series.
Yeah.
Didn't MNS have, like, an interview after, like, the Game 5 remake, and he said, like, oh, I would be so depressed if I was GGS because that draft was so good, not realizing that they're just going to remake the exact same draft, and I was, like, so confused about what MNS was saying.
Oh, I have a lot to say about draft conversation because I don't know how you feel about it, but before we get there, just, like, what are your big-picture takeaways on playoffs? Like, do you think EG was fraudulent the whole time? They came back down to Earth. Golden Guardians underperform expectations because they ended regular season first. Like, what were your... Now that you see finals weekend, are you surprised at anything?
For EG specifically, I think they relied heavily on Jojopyon. And in playoff, like the regular season matches, I think he was doing a really, really good job of just winning lane and just being able to shuckle the entire game. But they had a lot of internal issues, obviously, with jungle swapping around and all that stuff. And you can't rely on one player to just shuckle the entire game for your team. It felt like all the other players, maybe not Revenge, but I would say the other players in jungle and bot lane were definitely very... they didn't really know what to do in terms of mid-game decision-making. They didn't see the same angles that Jojopyon saw. And I think Jojopyon, we basically had a meme for him on C9 where, like, he's the general, you know? He's the general, and, like, he's going to say, go, 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 and they're all going to go. So if, like, one person can, like, bait and engage on Jojopyon and just flash it, like, they're just all going to, like, jump into us, even if it's a terrible fight, because Jojopyon's just screaming, go, 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 because they're just going to listen to Jojopyon. And that was, like, the meme. And obviously, like, I think EG were definitely a little bit overhyped, but I do think that they looked pretty good in regular season. I think it was like pretty well deserved.
Do you think JoJo was overhyped then? Because I thought he had an incredible split, and even in playoffs, it felt like every team is going to send support mid constantly, jungle mid constantly.
I don't think he was overhyped. I genuinely think JoJo Pin was really, really good.
Yeah,
I think that he deserved all the hype he got, and he was by far the best player on that team. for sure.
Yeah, he had pretty incredible. What about GG then? Is it surprising? I mean, that's the number two seed. They had a tiebreaker with you guys for first place. Mm-hmm. They obviously did lose that, but they don't end up making top three at the end of the day.
It's pretty wild. We definitely, I think all of our players pretty much thought that GGS would probably be the ones in the finals. I do think that their mid-jungle on GGS played worse than they did during regular season in the playoff matches, especially the last series they just played. And obviously Licorice, I thought was just solid throughout the entire series. I thought he played pretty well and definitely wasn't the reason they lost. And just a lot of mid-game errors from River, Gory, I felt like just lost them many games. And it was kind of sad to see, but playing against Team Liquid will be very, very fun because obviously Summit, he's the big man in the top lane, you know, the big ego battle, me and Summit.
We got actually a question about Summit. This one comes from the LCS Discord, and I think from a TL fan, it's from Murderino, says, are you scared of laning against Summit or terrified of laning against Summit?
Honestly, I do think that there's a little bit of I'm playing against Summit, you know, I got to try harder. You know, because Summit, I do think
time
it's the
to
best.
Sit up.
You know, it's time to sit up. You know, Summit is a really good top laner, and he's definitely, I think, the hardest person to lane against in the LCS. So, I respect him a lot in terms of his laning phase. I don't respect him that much when it comes to how he plays with his team. I don't think he plays team fights especially well. I don't think he plays macro especially well. But I do think that if he gets lane leads, he plays quite well. And he plays quite well to get the lane leads. I wouldn't say that he plays very well with the leads. So I got to make sure that I brush up in my 1v1s, you know, make sure I don't get behind the laning phase because we're just going to win the game, obviously, if we're even. I mean, that's what Mithy would always tell us, our coach. He was like, guys, if we just go even gold and we go to mid game against these teams, we will smash them. They suck overall. But if we just take all these flip plays, we keep rushing these barons and we keep making these random engages and feeling desperate to somehow get a lead in the game when you don't need to, that's how we lose. So
how do you feel then? So finals weekend, obviously, so Golden Guardians is fourth, so they're going to be playing against EU. So top three, you guys are waiting in the finals. It's going to be NRG and TL in lower bracket. I think a little bit surprising for a lot of people, you know, that those are the two teams that are at finals weekend. You guys just beat NRG 3-0. Mm-hmm. Is there one team that you're maybe a bit more worried about or that you would rather play?
I think for me, I'm more worried about TL just because I think that Dokla is way worse than Summit. And I think that's likely where TL will find their advantages against NRG is just that Summit will probably just win lane every single game against Dokla. I don't think that Dokla plays lane especially well, and I think that Summit is very good at exposing players who are very safe in laning phase. I don't think he allows them to just go even. He definitely forces their hand, and if you don't fight back against him, he's sort of just going to go up 40 CS naturally and just take every plate. And I think Dokler is that kind of player, and I assume that TL will be playing through top lane quite a bit. I do think that Palafox is better than APA, and that the mid jungle and NRG is more, they play better together than TL's mid jungle. But obviously you have the team fighting of TL, which I think is quite good, just because they're all really good mechanically, and they find really good engages. Usually APA is on the utility, CC champ, Nico and stuff like this, where you sort of just have to find a big engage, and that's your entire job. But the rest of the team, I think, plays pretty well around knowing when to engage, which angles do we want to engage, and also just the middle of the team fight, when to use your stopwatch, when you use flash, you know, dodging skill shots, stuff like that. I think they all play pretty well. But it's hard to know. I also think that NRG is sometimes they seem really inconsistent to me. It's
I was gonna ask, how do you feel about them in your series?
I feel like NRG during the regular season, they beat us obviously 2-0, and both teams that we're playing against beat us 2-0 in the regular season.
Doomed.
Right? but I just felt like they just don't have the same randomness in their gameplay that they had during regular season that won them those matches. You know, maybe we have less randomness, and that's why they're not able to find the same edges. But it doesn't really feel like NRG plays the mid to late game very well, and they don't really, you know, they don't have very stable ideas of how to play the game if it's not a complete banger. So against TL, I do think it will be a banger. Is a thing where I do think a lot of the games are going to be very, very bloody in early game, just because, you know, those teams are both really chaotic in early game. I would say that C9 is actually not that chaotic in early game, mainly because Blabba just loves to full clear. Like, that guy hates just, like, skipping camps, but whereas Piosik and Contracts just love skipping camps and running to a lane and just, like, fighting to the death. And I assume it's going to be really bloody and it's going to be very, very random. And I think that that is NRG's best game, is really random early games, and I could see them winning.
I mean, when you think about, like, they already played, right? Like, I don't know if you remember, but they played in the first
right.
round,
yeah,
and NRG 3-1 them. Mm. So that's how TL actually ended in the lower bracket.
True.
And APA had a really bad series.
Right. Yeah.
A really bad series in that one. I do think he has played better. I feel like it's interesting because there's obviously the TL reputation is that they're really good early game, and then they're just going to randomly throw the game in mid game, right? Like, someone's going to die in side lane. You know, people talk a lot about he led the league in ISO deaths by a lot.
Right.
You know, TL is maybe going to take a really bad fight, going to do something silly, and they're going to throw away their lead. And that's kind of like their reputation that has followed them, I think, for the last like 2 years. But it feels like over the last couple of series that they have been improving on that they aren't having as many random deaths. And I don't know if it's a product of just the drafts or the meta, but Summit hasn't been getting punished in side lanes as much. I feel like a lot of teams, when I think back to some of their previous series, you know, think back to EG and whatnot, a lot of teams just like don't even have the champions to punish what he's playing in the
exactly.
side lane, right?
Exactly.
Like, he's playing Fiora, and then he's playing against, I don't know, I can't remember the specific
Cassante.
Games, but like Cassante
yeah.
and maybe, I don't know, a Maokai or
right,
whatever,
right?
And it's just like, once this guy's ahead, doesn't actually really matter what he does unless there's a third person there. You can't
right.
you can't really kill him.
Exactly.
So it's interesting. Like, I'm kind of curious on your take, both of you guys. Like, do you think that TL has actually been improving on some of their mid-game stuff, you know, across their series with EG and Golden Guardians? Or is it just like a product of the individual games and they still have those same weaknesses?
I think that Summit is very aware that he like dies a lot in mid-game and late-game, but he definitely seems to not be improving it's very much, and a lot of it is just, like you said, down to comp. Like, if I'm playing Fiora against Cassante Maokai, I'm not dying in side lane, no matter how bad I play. Like, I need to be playing against something like Ornn Viego or something along these lines, like Cassante Kindred, these sort of champions, where, like, you can actually die in side lane. And it seems like a lot of the games he plays, he's playing, like, for example, I remember game 5, he was playing against, like, Sejuani Cassante, I think it was, as Gwen, and, like, you're just never going to die unless you're a complete animal. And I do think that he has, I mean, I think it would be unfair to say he hasn't improved a little bit. I do think that he, as a player, since, especially when he was on C9 in 2022 spring, he's definitely improved in terms of his deaths. He isn't as easy to kill. Like, I remember him being able to just die to every single gank. You come top lane, he's going to die. Like, it's like a guaranteed, it's like a seventh camp, you know, type of thing. But nowadays he's improved. Maybe it's like that, I don't know what happened with Marin, but maybe it's like Marin yelling at him a lot and he like got it stuck in his brain.
I don't think it was even like that long ago. It's pretty recent, it feels to me, that he got a lot better.
Yeah.
I think this series about
just the last two series that he's died less than sidelines.
Well, even
and TL has had less
even
issues.
In the early game about the seventh camp thing, like they tried to do that. They ganked
right.
him repeatedly in game 1 and I think at game 4 and game 5
mm-hmm.
and like I don't think they ever really snowballed off him that hard.
Right.
There was
yeah,
like the Cassante game
as well.
There was one Cassante game where Licorice kind of shit on him, but that was like, okay, whatever.
That was like Cassante Ornn, right?
Yeah, he got killed once or twice and just got rolled. But like the other actual ones where they tried to shut down his carries, it didn't happen. So he improved in that. And I think the other thing for APA was like he stopped trying to play the meta where it's like, we're playing either side of Jace Trist. I'm losing both sides. And he's like, screw it. Give me Nico. I'll go down 20 CS.
Yeah.
It'll get two plates on me. And then I play a champion. I know how to play in team fights. So I think the team looks a lot better. Piosik's playing well. I don't know if they've played well enough to become favored over NRG just because NRG is really hard to predict, but
yeah.
I think TL does have legitimate improvements that they're making, and it brings me to this draft point that I was holding off on. It's like everyone kept saying, Treats was saying it, I was saying the same thing, MNS was saying it, literally everyone is like, man, Golden Guardians drafts are so good, front to back team fighting, double marksman, huge front line, great engage, and then like Nico, Kai'Sa, Viego blow up one of those two marksmen immediately at the
but
start
more
of every
like
fight.
Gory just jumped in and killed himself.
Yeah.
That happens sometimes, but a lot of
happens so
that
many
happened
times
so
in that
many
series,
times.
Man.
I was screaming at him in game 5.
Gory was refusing to win that series.
You are talking about game 5. This also
not
happened
just
in
game 5.
It happened in game 2 and game 3, and I think you're giving way too little credit for APA's flanks in a lot of these, and he actually would always knock someone up at the start of a fight, and they would instagib one of the two. They did it to Stixxay plenty of times, too.
The one where he caught Stixxay's Ezreal was actually really nice, where he came around mid lane, and he flashed over the wall into the pit, or rather not into the pit, into
the
side
lane
brush.
But
that
even
one was actually really nice.
Even in game 3, which they lost, they were down like 8k gold, and they just made every fight freaking hard. And so like, I mean, is this just like a comp thing where it's like, God, these three champions together just annihilate one member, and it's so hard to stop a Nico from, if she wants to int, because she's, like you said, she's playing utility. Her job there is to set up the Viego for his first reset. Mm-hmm. Like,
Pyojin played really well that series, I think, too.
Yeah, I think a lot of those comps is really just your setup around objectives, and I think that Golden Guardians were not setting up very well in terms of like finding flanks. I don't think they did that very well. I don't think that their carries used flash very well. Like, a lot of the time you can know when Nico's going to flash on you based off the position of the fight, and I don't think that they used their spells very well around it mechanically. They weren't very reactive to it. And also just, you know, You're playing against these champions. You know that Nico's going to look for this flank. Why is like one of our tanks not hunting him around a jungle, knowing that he's going to look for these things? There was a lot of times where, like, I think there was one time at Herald where like they were chasing Rell, and it's obvious that Nico's going to look to flash in, and they just like Ezreal eat in and try to like kill the Rell when it's pretty obvious Nico's going to go on you. And it feels like they weren't playing around it very well. But I do think that APA was really good at finding those angles. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to give credit. Like, there's a lot of players that wouldn't have found those angles, that would have not looked for the flank. And
like Gory just, when he played at the one time.
It's column A and column B, right? Yeah. It's a bit of each.
Yeah, it's a bit of each.
Someone has to make a mistake, but you still have to be there in the right position at the right time to capitalize on a mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think the thing with the other two champions being able to burst down is the other thing, where it was like,
yeah,
there's two marksmen. Those are your only damage dealers. You blow one up at the start of every fight. It's like, oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, those comps are really unforgiving if you make mistakes, I think.
Right.
Because as soon as one of your carries dies in a two-threat comp, you don't really win the team fight anymore. They can kind of just walk at your last carry if their damage is mitigated somewhat. Mm-hmm. It's like, then you're just in these situations where it's like they have the Gwen and you're like Ornn and Maokai are in the front line.
Yeah,
and it's
Gwen's
like, you lose every skirmish in those fights. You only win as a cohesive unit. Mm-hmm. So there's so much pressure, I think, on you to not make those mistakes. But when you don't make those mistakes, they can feel really, really bulletproof because there's so much CC. There's the ability to create space for the double carries. Mm-hmm. I think that's why so many people are playing like Kai'Sa Trist and things like this. Right. And I mean, if Corki's coming in, it opens up even more for that, right? Because it's another AP carry. It's true though, right? It's another AP carry that you can have double marksman with. And Kai'Sa is really the only super good one right now. But if you can do it with Kai'Sa or Corki, you just need one of the two, and then you put another ADC in there basically, and okay, away you go.
I get PTSD from Corki. As soon as I swapped to mid lane, it became Corki Victor meta. And I could not handle it.
You swap after looking forward to some, like, I think it was the Akali meta at the Worlds right before you played.
I think it was like an Akali meta, yeah.
It's been Akali meta like the last two Worlds. So yeah, I think you had swapped into an Akali meta, becomes Victor Corki.
Some poor timing there.
Yeah, for sure.
So I guess a couple of quick questions. You're heading to New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you're stoked. Everyone's stoked to go to New Jersey. And this is going to be probably the biggest moment of your life. But out of all the other moments of your pro career so far, what has been the most heart-racing?
Out of all the insignificant
moments. Of all the ones that are about to get triumphed, what is number one that's about to get dethroned? This is a question from Elio in Discord.
About to be dethroned was probably the Lee Sin kick at MSI 2021. I think against Gala and RNG. And then I found this Lee Sin kick, and then we beat RNG as like I don't even know what our record was, probably like 1-5 or something, 1-4 or something like that against.
I just
MSI
googled Fudge Lee Sin kick versus RNG. Is it this one?
Yeah, it's that one.
All right.
It's that one.
Okay, here we go. So if you guys want to see this play, it's called Fudge Insane Lee Kick versus RNG on YouTube.
It used to go Stride Breaker. And Stridebreaker had a dash back. Stridebreaker had a dash back in these days.
Yeah.
And then basically I just, you know, Q dodged Lee Sin, Q in the feathers, and then like flash behind him, found this kick, and then we won the game. Well, we didn't win the game off that play, but we won the game because we got really far ahead off of that play.
Oh, that was actually clean as hell. Okay. Yeah. So he Qs to the Nautilus, then ward hops over the wall into the Raptors.
He lost vision.
Dodge the Q.
He lost dodged the Q and then Zaya E, and then he lost vision, so I flashed behind him and he didn't ult. Oof,
that was nice.
So it was like, when that happened,
that's
it was
not
like
a glue guy.
That, what I was looking for, the thing that was
Can't
felt so
anymore.
Good about that moment was like the lead up to it was me getting flamed my entire rookie split. But I played Luckin, I completely entered. I played Spring, I was like getting better, but I was still kind of bad. And then I went to MSI, and everyone's like, "Oh fuck, just gonna get demolished by international competition." And then I was playing against like Khan, and like solo killing him as Lee Sin, and then like playing against Armut, and then he was like supposed to be this insane top lane, and I was solo killing him as Aurelia Jace, that sort of stuff. And then obviously I got a lot of validation from just like everyone being like, oh, Fudge played really well at MSI, like he was like the best player on C9 at this MSI, and it was like, it was finally I was getting a little bit of attention, and that's what felt so good about like that moment, I guess, is just like the first taste of validation as a pro player.
Yeah, it is
amazing play.
I remember really that, well, that tournament as well, just being like, oh shit, he's doing it.
Yeah, that's what I need to get back to. Those were the glory days.
You at that MSI, I think people were talking about you in the same way that people were talking about Licorice at this MSI.
Yeah, yeah. Right? It's very similar where like, you know, as a top laner, like I said, like your team's not doing so well, but you can still look pretty good, you know. And I think that when you make those plays, I mean, I don't think that my team was playing extremely bad at MSI when I was playing well, but it's just natural that like your team's probably not going to win just because you're playing against Eastern teams. Mm-hmm. And if you somehow find a solo kill, like Licorice was playing really well against some
three solo kill, yeah, 369.
Throw a solo kill 369, right? And he's been playing well
against Ben.
Exactly. So yeah. It's like, as soon as you have those moments, it looks very good. And he obviously played pretty well, like way better than expectations against the Eastern top laners. So he deserves like that recognition for sure.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And hopefully you guys will be able to all do that. You know, after they slap down the fourth seed at Europe, Licorice will be in Worlds too.
I'm
you know?
The most hyped for the fourth seed match. I didn't even care about my own Worlds games. Like, NA needs to be you in that fourth seed.
You're going
to
be there in the crowd cheering them on.
I don't even know where it's going to be.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
Yeah, me neither, guys. I definitely haven't checked Slack 2 days ago, and you know,
leaks.
Hopefully, it comes out soon.
Fired.
If NA loses that match, though, Fudge is gonna be mental boomed.
Yeah, I'm not gonna be able to handle it.
If there's four seeds from Europe there,
actually, no, that's gonna give me motivation.
Oh yeah,
like I need to prove NA
justice for Licorice.
Justice for Licorice.
Do it for Licorice.
Do it for Licorice.
You like have his picture and stuff. You know, you take it out and give it a little kiss before every match.
My lucky charm.
Yeah, exactly. You can both get like a half heart locket with each other's picture in it.
Great.
That you can wear at Worlds.
We'll get friendship bracelets. Yeah. Actually,
it'll have to be like wartime. You have to give him like the things that like he lost. When he died, he gets sent back to the loved one.
A locket of his hair.
It's like his old like dog tags or whatever come home to you.
His jersey or whatever. Yeah.
Let's refocus up to finals weekend then with
finals previews.
NRG versus TL.
I think the biggest question just has to be: Did TL actually improve enough to really challenge NRG? Because when I think back to the previous series, it was just the biggest thing was mid gap. Palafox was slapping APA on, you know, on the Trist side of the Trist versus Jace, and on the Jace side of the Jace versus Trist, and playing really well, I think, in 5v5s. You know, you talked about potentially, you know, someone be able to create really big top lane advantages. I guess to me the biggest question is just like, can APA like stabilize? Is he playing well enough that he's going to be able to kind of like neutralize mid enough that TL can get other advantages? Because I do think TL's bot lane is playing well. I think Yon is playing well. I think Core is having a better split. And at least across these last two series, they definitely had less of the mid-game throws and less of those issues. So I think, you know, it's like, can they play a more stable game? Because I think if they can play a more stable game against NRG, then they could be successful.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that TL is probably a little bit better than NRG in mid to late game. Just because, I mean, I really think that NRG just suck at mid to late game, to be honest. But there is also the thing of, like, who will be able to stabilize better? Will Dokla be able to stabilize better? Will APA decide to stabilize better? Like, they should be probably planning drafts around how do we find stable matchups for Dokla so that he doesn't get smashed by, you know, Summit or APA in the other way, right? And I also think that TL's bot lane is slightly better than NRG's bot lane, at least when I watched their laning phase. But it's hard to tell. I feel like it's going to be actually a pretty close match.
The thing that's hard for me to judge is like, how much was NRG playing bad and how much was they're playing C9? Because you guys, like you said, are pretty clearly, at least based off regular season and recent history, winning all the championships, the best team in the league.
Yep.
They should have beat you guys in game three.
Yeah, right.
That, like, you know, could have been a closer series then. Mm-hmm. And I also think that it's funny that people say NRG's bad in the late game, but they actually often come back in games and win. They came back against Golden Guardians. They came back against CL before. And I don't think like they're good in the late game in the traditional sense where like they make really like super good plays, their vision control is nutso, and like, yeah, you just can't walk into them. You're like, oh, they're choking, yeah, us out. They like,
I guess that's how I feel, is like, oh, I'm playing against these guys and they're like not on this mid wave that they're supposed to be on, and they're not contesting this vision here, and they're not poking us on this vision when we're walking in, and these sort of like small things that it's like kind of hard to see, I guess. But
then
that's what I'm basing it off of.
Random fights,
and
that...
then I guess I'm just not seeing them winning these random fights because I'm not watching the games close enough. But
it's actually crazy because they again, this is, I think there's a lot of these like fundamental things that people say is like why they're not good at late game, mm-hmm, but then they do win a lot of games from behind or not, mm-hmm, winning positions because they get really scrappy, and then like, you know, you're getting to, like, there was another game that had a crazy base defense with them as well, right? They were, well, other than that one, maybe I'm thinking of a different series from 2 weekends ago, but
I'm not sure. There's been so many games.
Yeah,
my mind is completely mind fucked by League of Legends right now.
Yeah,
I don't remember a single game that I played.
They just get into really weird situations late game where it's like neither team's late game experience matters because like you're flipping for like two objectives at once, and they also, mm-hmm, have someone in bot lane, yeah, pushing your turrets, and you're just like, people just
in the regular season
happens.
They had a lot of games where it's like, oh, they're gonna like go to Elder and then they double TP in your base, or like they're doing those kind of like wacky,
right,
situations. Or Palafox had a few where he gets a solo kill in a side lane, mm-hmm, and then I think even against you guys, I think one of the games of regular season he, mm-hmm, solo killed MNS, mm-hmm, I want to say, mm-hmm, and then they were able to end off that while you guys were having
a fight
around
in
the objective.
He was in our base. Yeah, he was, yeah, in our base, and he killed as LeBlanc of SJS.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Yeah, I think it was right by mid lane.
Yeah.
So like they do, I think, do a good job of creating these like chaotic scenarios,
right,
and I think problem solving well in that. So I'll definitely give them credit. It's interesting because TL, obviously, like in this last series, Summit was playing a lot of Jax, right?
Right.
So if you're saying that you think for energy they need to kind of like reduce variance basically in top lane and stabilize top lane, what do you think the approach is? Because basically the only ban that energy was doing every game, they banned Rumble, right? And so that's what they were doing. They're going Rumble ban every game, mm-hmm, and they're basically trying to play Renekton.
Yep.
Like, is that the path, or do you think you need to ban Jax as well? Because if,
yeah,
you ban Rumble Jax, and then I feel like it really kind of limits options.
So like for Dokla, I mean, what our plan against Dokla was this guy plays Renekton and Kassante.
Mm-hmm.
And he does not play Rumble, does not play Jax. They will likely ban Rumble. They might not ban Jax because we haven't played Jax. In the previous series that we played against NRG, we actually banned Jax. Not against NRG, against GG? Yes, GG. We banned Jax a lot of the games. So they probably assume that we don't play Jax. So the first game, they're probably going to open Jax. The first game, they actually opened both Rumble and Jax because they gave us Kai'Sa first pick, and they didn't assume that we were going to play Rumble with Kai'Sa because it's too much AP in the first three, and then we wouldn't be able to find double AD mid jungle. So they didn't ban Rumble or Jax. I picked Jax. Then they banned Jax and Rumble in game two, and then they opened Jax in game three, but they banned Rumble. So from my perspective, Dokla does not play these two champions, Rumble and Jax.
Mm-hmm.
This is an issue with Dokla's champion pool. He plays Renekton and Kassante. Plays Ornn decently, plays GP in some matchups. I'm not saying that he can't play these champions like Rumble and Jax,
yep,
but he just seems to not want to. Maybe,
yep,
as a team, they don't play well around top lane, so he doesn't want to play these champions that require usual jungle assistance at certain timings. So for them, if I was in RG, what I'd do is I'd just ban Rumble, Jax, pick Renekton no matter what.
Yep.
It's as simple as that.
I guess the question to me is, like, because that seems like the obvious problem solving, because it's like, if you just blind Renekton and Rumble and Jax are banned, well,
Summit's going to play Kennen.
Yeah, he's going to try to play Kennen, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, also, what happens if Team Liquid then just do one ban top lane every game and they just ban Renekton, right? Because then
That's
it feels like then you're getting forced into tanks, and then now all of a sudden Fiora and,
right,
Gwen are opened up, right?
Right?
Mm-hmm. So is that just, okay, checkmate, too bad you can't play all these champions, so you're always going to be at a disadvantage? Or do you think that there is a way to kind of problem solve that?
I mean, there's a way to problem solve it. You, like, obviously you ban Rumble Jax, they ban Renekton, you go to like 4-5, you ban those champions, and you pick any tank you can. It's a, like,
so you just have to late pick and
like,
spend,
I feel
four
like
bans.
You just late pick if they ban Renekton, otherwise if they open Renekton, just pick Renekton no matter what.
Yeah,
I think it's a pretty good answer, and well, pretty good from that position,
right,
to just go later in it,
but
and,
it means
and
four top lane bans to,
yeah,
then to problem
but
solve.
It's right. To be fair, there were four like APA bans. Like, I thought those were a total waste.
Mm-hmm.
That Golden Guardian was doing in the previous series.
Yeah.
They would ban out Cassio.
I think their hope was, because a lot of people talk about APA, that, oh yeah, he has his champs, but he can't play the meta.
Right.
And so I think the hope was that you ban out his comfort and he falls off a cliff.
Yeah.
Which just didn't really happen.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The Ziggs,
you have to
Pat Cassio. Zigzag, I understand. Cassio feels like you don't want him to play that into your Trist, because otherwise, because they were docked the first pick.
They're banning Cassio for Trist.
But then you're banning two of his three champs, and then there was also LeBlanc, Jace's ear bans, and they're just like pinching the pool so much that he's just playing Nico, soft losing, and then still getting a comfort champ that's playmaking. So I think for NRG, just kind of ignore AP a little bit more. Palafox seemed to get the better of him the last time, and until you prove you need to change that part of the matchup, just focus on top lane and trying to protect Doklo a little bit. Doesn't feel like the worst.
Yeah, if the NRG coaches are listening, ban Rumblejax, go 4-5, ban Gwen Fiora, and pick Ornn.
What if they ban Ornn in 4-5 2?
They ban Ornn, pick Sion.
Wants
to play
NRG. If they ban Sion, pick Gragas.
You just keep going down the tank prio list.
Maybe Aatrox is a problem. Never mind.
Ooh, Aatrox shows up too.
FF.
You need five top bans.
This draft is lost, guys.
Just more bans, more bans.
Kennen's also open, just FF. Our draft sucks.
Well, Kennen, I don't think is that big of a problem for tanks, though.
Yeah, not as big of a problem, yeah.
Yeah, like the early lane is going to suck, but it feels like as soon as you have like a couple levels and you have a little bit, then Kennen's damage stuff is kind of mattering.
Yeah, you're sort of chilling.
Yeah, exactly.
What about a bot lane at all? Do you think it's going to be super relevant, or is it more like...
I feel like FBI's been doing really well in the newer meta, because I didn't feel like FBI on Zeri and those kind of champs was working as well, but I feel like FBI on Ezreal and Kai'Sa... he has been performing, I think, a lot better.
I think that, well, from our team's perspective, a lot of it was Zyra Khan. They love Zyra Khan. Obviously, Ignar is like a huge Rakan player, and FBI is pretty good at Zyra. And Kai'Sa were their two main champions. He likes Aphelios a lot. He likes Aphelios quite a bit. And Ezreal, we actually didn't really feel like FBI was super good at. Maybe like his laning phase was too weak, so they didn't feel like Ezreal was a big problem. But The Zaya, Kai'Sa, Aphelios, obviously I think he's fine at Ezreal. I think he's all pretty good at. He doesn't really seem very good on champions that don't have mobility. And these immobile champs like Varus, for example. Aphelios, Aphelios is a little bit different, I guess, where he's like actually really good at Aphelios. Surprisingly, I guess he just plays it all the time. But these other champs like Varus and stuff, I feel like he gets caught out quite a bit. Even in the Sivir game, he was getting caught out quite a bit as a Sivir, obviously, which if you're getting caught out as a Sivir, then I don't know what's happening. But
That game was a tragedy, because even like Ignar's Rakan that game was really weird. He missed a lot of engages on you guys. And,
I don't know, Sven's better than him in Rakan now.
There you go.
Unless you disagree.
No, I after that last data point, it's kind of hard to.
That was a good example, yeah.
Last thing I was going to say was about Team Liquid and, oh shit, what was it? It slipped my mind now. Too much Baldur's Gate. Someone else talk. Well, I think.
I was just going to say, so like in the last series, they played Zyrakon game one, and then it was three straight games of Ezreal when they played last time. And I thought the FBI played pretty well in that. Mm-hmm. They also, TL was doing some weird stuff, though, where they did two games of like set, I think, support and stuff as well.
Yeah.
So they were doing some weird things. So I do think this is going to be a lot closer, if not TL favored, because I think they're going to make some adjustments. Like, I think the set support did not work out at all.
That is cringe as hell.
I just think set support is like, man, if anything goes wrong, your game is
it's just not it.
Yeah,
like you play set with Kalista, and it's a cheese lane where like you're gonna flash E them level one, and you hope they don't flash it, because if they do, you lose lane instantly. It's as simple as that. Like, it's like playing Olaf with flash ghost, and then you like ghost to someone level one. You hope they don't realize they're gonna do it.
Yeah,
stuff like that.
I remember what I was gonna ask now. Okay. It was the homage to C9 comp, where they played the Kindred Melio Ash. I don't know if you saw that game.
Piosik is not as good at Blabber, Kindred. Like, I'm sorry to say, but Piosik is just not as good at Blabber.
One guy has a world championship skin.
Yeah, it's just not as good, unfortunately. So. No, I'm joking. I mean, I think that, obviously that game, I think it was like Summit playing pretty poorly, right? He was really far behind on Ornn. If it was my Ornn, I think they probably would have won the game.
Yeah, he got clapped that game.
You know, it was a big top gap, for sure, that game. But I actually do think that Blabber is probably better at Kindred from watching that game. You know, crazy statement, I know. He has a skin, guys. Yeah, blah, 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 blah.
Blabber would have 3-0'd in the finals if he was on DRX.
You put Blabber on DRX, same thing happened.
Wouldn't have been close.
Probably.
Wouldn't have had to go to the
Did you watch the series?
Would have got some more smites at least, that's for sure. all right, predictions. NRG TL.
I feel like TL is actually going to win. I mean, yeah. I think I don't think APA will look nearly as bad as he did in the first series. I feel like he kind of had the luxury of being able to get his nerves out. Mm-hmm. I think the last couple series, he's been a lot more stable. It feels like he's building confidence. So I feel like mid won't be as big of a gap. And I think Core is probably not going to be running back on the set in multiple games. I think that's going to be a pretty big difference. So I think they have the benefit of being able to adjust. And I think some of the things that were in the favor of energy, they can't adjust as much, right? Like, I think some of the top lane stuff that we're talking about, it's tough mm-hmm. to problem solve for a champion pool and whatnot there. And yeah. I feel like energy needs to have a big mid gap, needs to have some of these advantages if they're going to be able to repeat in the same way. And I feel like TL should be able to neutralize enough that I think they could win.
It's a hard one. My heart's saying that NLG wins, but I think TL should win just because I think that drafting... The draft will probably be... Actually, God, it's so hard.
It's really hard. I mean, also,
energy is a tough... Both these teams are tough to predict, but energy especially.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, they get three which energy
them,
are we getting?
They
know?
Get three of them or they could get 3-0.
Exactly.
Yeah, I feel like TL's at least like consistent and like they're generally pretty good. They have some mm-hmm. oopsies, but like they're going to do similar level, whereas energy is just all over the map.
Across the last two series, I think TL looked pretty consistent.
Yeah.
Although you could say that maybe NLG was just playing against C9. So I'm going to go for NLG. I'm going to say NLG is going to
win. It was
the
C9 effect.
It was just the C9 effect. Like they play against us, they have a huge mental disadvantage. You know, you're playing against C9, dude. So you're going to play way worse. That's just how it works. You
of
know?
Course.
I'm stroking my own ego right now. But no, not my own ego. Probably Berserkers because I'm not really part
you're
of the
glue
team.
Guy.
I'm just the glue guy.
That's what he's doing on this episode. He's hyping up Berserker and his team. I also think both teams have two players who have never played in an arena before.
Oh, that's true, too. Yeah.
Because they'll have APA and Yon who have never done it, and then Dokla and Palafox are both, or all four of them, are in their first like finals weekend kind of event. So I actually think some portion
and
of this series.
Contracts hasn't in a real.
What about
long time.
APA and Yon?
That's what I'm saying. Each team has two.
Okay,
two
okay. Each
yeah.
team two. Okay,
yeah, yeah, so like it, part of this weirdly feels like it's hard to predict as well because like...
Has Summit played in a really big stadium? I'm trying to think.
I don't think so. This is his first Worlds.
That's what I was going to say.
It's, I know it's his first Worlds, and I don't think he's made a domestic finals before.
Yeah, so he probably hasn't played in a big stadium, funny enough. Because, I mean, you wouldn't think of him because he's been around, he's been in a bunch of different leagues. But I don't... I'm trying to recall if he ever made like a final... like.
I also don't know what LPL does for their venues sometimes and stuff like that. Because they travel around and like, I don't know.
Yeah, he's like 7th, 8th in LPL, I think.
Yeah, I don't think he would have ever played in a venue like this either.
Yeah, so either way, there's going to be some level of nerves cropping up, and we've seen APA get nervous a little bit. It seemed like in his first series, does that going to happen again in an arena? Like people, I always hear pros their first time in an arena. Dude, the stage was vibrating. What the hell?
Oh yeah, that's a classic.
Yeah.
You don't really feel you don't really feel it until you go on stage. You don't realize how it's going to be.
You do the warm ups. There's no crowd there.
I thought about it more, and I was like. NLG has like the huge huddles where they go like they start screaming and stuff, and I'm like, yeah, we got that energy in us, you know. So I'm kind of going for NLG now. I don't think TL has that same energy, you know, the NA pride.
What? They're gonna all scream in Korean, and APA is gonna be like, yeah.
this is totally an aside, but did you see there was an interview that was so funny to me. So after, I can't remember which year it was. Maybe it was against EG. I don't know. Anyway, Ziggs was left open.
Yeah.
And APA gets asked, so why didn't you pick Ziggs there? I thought you would go Ziggs because it was left open. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of your champ. And he's like, yeah, I wanted to play Ziggs. I thought we were going to pick it too. So I said, can I have Ziggs here? And then they all spoke in Korean and locked in Trist.
So that's kind of sad.
So he was like, oh yeah, I was surprised I didn't get Ziggs too. I thought I was going to get it.
That one? And then in Pyosik's pentakill, they reran the audio, and it's all in Korean.
Oh,
and
no.
he has a really nice flank in that fight, and there's no one's saying anything. And then, like, partway through this, like, pentakill, you hear Yon go, good job, APA. And then he goes right back to Korean. It's so funny.
It must be kind of hard. Like, yeah. The team environment sounds really weird to
be in. It's just solo queue. You just solo queue with people, and...
APA, he's living the NA dream. He's playing Korean solo queue all the time.
And he's great at
solo
queue.
He's playing Korean solo queue on stage.
Yeah. They have such a funny team environment. I'm actually...
Yeah, it's got to be really bizarre for APA. Like, what a weird experience. And this is his only... Like LCS experience,
exactly.
Right?
It's
like
the first LCS experience.
He's never had the other, but he's going to Worlds.
Imagine how good he'll be when he's able to talk to his team.
Yeah, he's never talked to his teammates before, and he's going to Worlds.
Yeah.
I mean, they do still get along, to be fair.
Of
like,
course, of course.
After they lost the game.
Nah, I'm sure they shit talk him in Korean all the time.
I'm sure they do, too.
By the way, I like sort of understand Korean, so I can tell when Berserker and Eminence are shit talking one of our teammates. Like, I got my eyes on them at all times. Now they stopped. I can tell they stopped doing it around me because I started like pointing it out.
You hear the, ah, fuck,
getting too smart.
Fun to see yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you hear some of those. You're like, guys, it's just one soul kill.
You just need to bide your time, and then when they're shit-talking someone, you respond in Korean shit-talking them. And then it's just going to be like the boom moment, you know?
Like, oh, shoot.
I got you.
I should have just acted like I didn't know what they were talking about.
Yeah.
I just spilled all the beans.
And then just one day, just like in a movie, you know, you reveal you speak in perfectly fluent Korean back to them, and they're like... What have we said to him?
It's like one of those TikToks.
Yeah. I'll join you on NRG 3-2. I think maybe it's the C9 effect. And I'll also say then NRG 3-2 C9 in the finals after.
Yeah, easy.
Yep.
C9, absolute frauds.
C9 looking forward to Worlds. Spends 40 minutes of the dive talking about Worlds instead of the upcoming matches.
That is fair, honestly. I will refocus back on NRG and TL. For me... I don't think that they will 3-2 us. You know, maybe they'll take a game. I'll give them a game. You know,
yeah.
I'll give them a game. I'm being generous.
What about the fans? C9 hates the fans.
I feel like the past two finals that we've won, I think there's been silver scrapes the day before.
Yeah. So why are you robbing these fans of their joy?
No, I'm saying that NRG will 3-2 TL.
Okay.
But.
Yeah,
they're
but what
getting,
about the people that come on Sunday?
They're not getting
they don't
so
deserve
scraped.
To be entertained.
Just, it's going to be a quick 3-0, just like it's always been. And we're just going to do a rerun.
I hope it's five games, but just make sure you win game one, because Blabber is one game away from having the best win rate through the first 300 games of a player's career in the LCS. If he loses this game, he'll tie Bjergsen for that record.
That's a cool stat, not going to lie, especially because I feel like in modern era, it's harder to dominate in the way that some players did in the past.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're lucky, I guess, because we have our team. I feel like our team has just been like the same throughout the past like year and a half, right? Except obviously MNS came in a little bit later, but
Blabber's been that's a lot more than 300 games.
Blabber has been good his entire pretty much.
You play 18 games regular season unless there's like a wonky format, which we've mm-hmm. had at times, and then you also usually will play 10 to 15, 20 games in postseason,
right,
which means like in a year you'll play 60 games, and at 300 you're basically 5 years into your career. So it is not like, oh, he has a hot start. It's like this is at this point, you know, like well into the middle of someone's career. So the fact that he is contesting for that title is pretty cool.
Do you ever think about that kind of stuff? Do you think about like historically how maybe the people would look at you or look at players on your team? Do you care at all?
I'm pretty short-term focused, to be honest. I'm not really thinking about like historically, but obviously like I do want to keep winning titles just because just stacking those titles is nice.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal is to have five in a row. Obviously, I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but five in a row to beat TL. So that's like my overall goal right now.
Yeah.
You've gone to Worlds your first 4 years of your career? Because you went with...
4 years.
Oh, didn't you go...
Oh, yeah, you're right,
didn't
actually.
You go with Mammoth?
I did go in... Oh, yeah. My first split, I played in Summer Split of 2019. Yeah, I went with Mammoth for OCE. And then 2020, I was in Academy. So I
couldn't
go to Worlds.
You didn't get to go.
So you've gone three times.
C9
then?
Also didn't make it.
Well, that was their collapse year, yeah.
Yeah, that was the collapse year, right?
Didn't have the glue.
Yeah, they didn't have the glue. And then I joined in 2021. We went to Worlds. 2022, went to Worlds. 2023, and now we're going to Worlds, yeah.
He's chasing Jensen, 5 years behind.
Yeah.
He'll get there.
Yeah, only five straight.
Five more to go.
The longevity is really impressive with stuff like that.
Sad that is the streak
broke
this
split.
I put
so much
weekend.
Value when I'm like looking at players historically on consistency, because I know how hard it is and how much work you have to put in to stay at the top of something. And so to be actually just the level of dedication to stay at the top of something mm-hmm. for 8 years, for 10 years,
yeah,
for stuff like
ridiculous.
That is crazy. And that's what makes, I think, Fakers just...
Of course.
It's just like, what the hell? And even, you know, I feel like it was so interesting because... Every time it extends, people are like, ah, Faker's not that good anymore, you know? And then this whole Faker swap out for Poby thing was reestablished. Everyone's just like, never mind, he's the GOAT!
I mean, it's kind of interesting. I do think a lot of it is like probably just the mentality change from the players on the rest of the team. Obviously, I do think Faker's better than Poby. And I assume a lot of what Faker's job is within the team is being like the glue of the team and the shot calling. He's the
Faker's
general.
Faker's a glue guy. Fudge is a glue guy. What's the difference?
We're kind of the
glue.
Same.
Yeah.
We're kind of the same, except that he's more handsome.
He's just like me for real, for real.
Me and Faker, no difference. Can't spot the difference.
Yeah, we're boys. He looked at me in the elevator, actually.
Did you try giving him a thumbs up?
No, I didn't give him a thumbs up. He looked at me and he smiled. So like that was like probably the best moment of my entire life.
Yeah. One time he was in an elevator with me and I gave him the Faker thumbs up and he gave me a Faker thumbs up. I was like,
damn, bro. We're boys now.
Yeah, yeah. We're tight. We're tight.
He does that to everyone, all right? You're not special.
No, he gives
everyone the same thumbs
up. It's just reactive. He's just like, another guy? Okay, yeah, sure.
I think he just permanently walks down the hallways at Riot like this. Just like,
I feel bad for Faker. I feel like how tiring must it be to like have to like always say hi to people? Otherwise, they're just going to like...
Yeah, it's like their best day. And just for you, it's just like another 10 minutes. And you're just like, oh, God. Hey, yeah, I'm happy to make your life. Here
must
we go.
Must be a hard life.
Yeah.
It's hard being the GOAT.
Yeah. Actually, tiring.
He's got so many trophies got to fit in his house, you know? It's difficult.
He's got so much money. He has his mansion and, like, all these trophies and stuff. And, like,
he doesn't care about that. He's just trying to game.
Yeah, he probably actually doesn't care that much.
He's in there. All right, well, this has been a fun one. Thank you so much for coming on, Fudge. Appreciate you. We will obviously see you in New Jersey, where Mark says you're going to lose to NRG.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, maybe that'll make you guys more hungry, and then you'll go to Worlds and you'll win.
I'll see Mark at the after party, okay?
Every time afterwards. Hey, C9, my favorite team. Let me into the VIP area. Every time I sneak into the VIP area.
I guarantee you, Mark is going to predict 3-0 on the broadcast for NRG, by the way.
Who can say?
Dude,
I was telling people this.
I can say. That's it.
Fudge finally learned what I was doing. He called me a rat after, was it the EG or the Energy Series?
Oh, yeah. We forgot to address the super serious Mark Z Fudge beef.
Yeah. The EG series where like I saw him and I was like, bro, you're a rat, man. Because I keep seeing him predict on Twitter like us losing. And I'm like, why are you predicting us losing? Like, you're so delusional, no?
M&S finally, I think, caught on too. He was talking to me a little bit during the games.
I think M&S was saying stuff that was like more like angry than me. Like,
I think I legitimately.
It just turns out that everyone on C9 hates Mark.
It was this M&S. I think the rest were just like didn't give a fuck.
Yeah, but like, he was legitimately tilted because there's the what started it all was I predicted against him. He question marked me on Twitter, and then I said like, yeah, well, Tactical's gonna shit on Berserker today, and I don't. I think he knew that I've been trolling this whole time, so I think he finally figured
it
out.
But I feel like you're the type of guy that says they're trolling, and then like when you like are right about a prediction, you're like, I knew it all along. I predicted this. Oh, like, you're absolutely. That type of guy. That's
yeah,
like, just
I was the only one who predicted
situation.
Team Liquid yesterday.
You can just say it. Mark's
I was
just
the,
a rat.
Guys, look at
I
the prediction.
I was the only one that predicted
look at
Team
the,
Liquid.
Look at the graphic. Like Fudge is saying, I was the only one to predict Team Liquid yesterday.
Congratulations, man.
Yeah, Mark is definitely not a sheeple.
Yeah.
He's just an idiot. And that's going to do it for this episode of The Dive. That'll wrap it up for us for now. Remember, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button on YouTube so you don't miss an episode of The Dive. Thank you so much, Fudge. Appreciate you a lot coming in. This was a fun episode. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor.fm. And we tried getting LCS questions from the LCS Discord this week. So let us know what you think. And if you have more questions that you want featured in the episode, join us in the LCS Discord. You can hit us up for questions there. Summer playoffs continues this Saturday, August the 19th at the Prudential Center with NRG versus Team Liquid, 1 p.m. Pacific. And then on Sunday, the glue guy himself, Fudge, is going to be waiting in the finals.
The glue guy is here.
Watch him. Watch him glue the other team to the floor.
I'm going
to
be gluing my teammates together.
So he's going to be locking in Ornn. He's going to be upgrading Berserker's items.
I'm going to be playing Kassante and blocking them fucking Brom Qs so well.
Playing Rumble, going bot, ulting the wave.
Don't worry, I'll block the shot glass.
I don't need the Herald. Send it mid or bot. I don't need it.
I hate being a top player now.
All right, see y'all next time.